I think that the stenciled messages are opening instructions, she said. It is the same message, the same stencil, repeated in four places around the door. In each case, there is a line painted from it.
An arrow? Someone called.
Others, who were standing where they could see it better, were more certain.
Those are arrows!
They don't look like our arrows, Cord said, but maybe the geometers do them differently. Each of them is aimed at a panel about the size of my hand. These panels appear to be held in place with fasteners, flush head machine bolts, four per panel. I don't have the right tool to put into them, but I can fake it with a daisy head driver. She frisked herself.
How do we know they are fasteners at all? Someone called. We know nothing of these aliens and their praxis.
It's just obvious, Cord called back. I can see little burrs where some alien mechanic over-torqued them. The heads are knurled, so aliens can turn them with their alien fingers when they are loose. The only question is, clockwise or counterclockwise?
She jammed a driver into place, whacked it once with the heel of her hand to seat it, and grunted as she applied torque.
Counterclockwise, she announced.
For some reason, this caused a cheer to run through the crowd of avowed.
The geometers are right-handed, someone called,
and everyone laughed. Cord pocketed the bolts as she got them out. The little panel fell off and clattered through the scaffolding to the stone plaza, where someone snatched it up and peered at it like a page from a holy book.
Behind the panel is a cavity containing a T-handle, she announced. But I'm going to remove the other three panels before I mess with it.
Why?
Someone asked. Typical argumentative avowed, I thought.
Going to work on another panel, Cord answered patiently. It's like when you bolt the wheel onto your Moab. You take turns tightening the nuts to equalize the stress.
What if there is pressure differential? Orlo asked.
Another good reason to take it slow, Cord muttered. We don't want anyone to get smashed by a flying door. As a matter of fact,
she looked out at the crowd of avowed below. Yule took her meaning. He cupped his hands around his mouth and bellowed,
Move back! Everyone get clear of the hatch! 100 feet away! Move!
The voice was shockingly loud and authoritative. People moved and opened up a corridor all the way to Gunnell's Fetch. More aircraft, of two or three different types, approached while Cord was undoing the panels. We could hear them landing on the other side of the wall. Someone called down news that soldiers were getting out, down on the road by the souvenir shop. A thought occurred to me.
Saman, I asked, are you sending this out over the reticulum?
Smile, Saman answered. Right now, 1 billion people are laughing at you.
I tried not to think about the soldiers and the 1 billion people. A hiss came from the probe. Cord jumped back and almost toppled from the scaffold. The hiss died away asymptotically over a few seconds. Cord laughed nervously.
One of the things that happens when you operate a T-handle, she said, is that a pressure-equalizing valve opens up.
Did air go in or out?
Orlo asked.
In.
Cord operated the other three T-handles.
Uh-oh, she said. Here it comes.
And the door simply fell out and hit the ladder she was standing on.
Yul got his arms up in time to steer it down to the ground.
We all watched that. Then all looked to Cord, who was standing there, hands on hips, pelvis cocked to one side, aiming the beam of her headlamp into the probe.
What's in there?
Someone finally asked.
A dead girl, she said, with a box on her lap.
Human or...
Close, Cord said, but not from Arb.
Cord crouched as if to enter the capsule, but then startled as the scaffolding torqued, rocked, and rebounded. It was Yule. He had vaulted up to join her. He wasn't about to let his girl climb into an alien spaceship until he had checked it for monsters. The scaffold had been about right for one and had now reached maximum capacity. No one else was going up there as long as most of the space was claimed by an agitated Yulasitor Kraid. Cord was mildly offended. She refused to move, so Yule had to drop to his knees and stick his head into the doorway down around the level of her thighs. It felt haphazard, hasty, and absolutely the wrong way to treat such priceless theoretical evidence. If circumstances had been different, Avout would have swarmed the ladders and restrained Yule. Nothing would have been touched until all had been measured, phototyped, examined, analyzed. But the hovering and circling aerocraft, as well as other sound effects from above, had put everyone in a different frame of mind.
"Yule!"
Saman shouted. And as soon as Yule turned around, the Ida lobbed his Jija up to the scaffold. Yule reached instinctively, snatched it out of the air, and thrust it into the capsule. It could see in the dark better than a human, and so he ended up using its screen as a night vision device. That's how he noticed the dark stains in the clothing of the dead geometer.
"She's wounded,"
he announced.
"She's bleeding."
There were cries of alarm from some of the Avout who assumed Yule must be talking of Cord, but soon it was clear that he was speaking of the geometer in the capsule. It had become clear to him, somehow, that the creature was female.
"Are you claiming she is alive?"
Saman asked.
"I don't know,"
Yule said, turning his head to look down at us. As long as he was out of the way, Cord thrust a leg into the doorway and leaned her head and upper body through. We heard a muffled exclamation. Yule relayed it.
"Cord says she's still warm."
All kinds of theoretical questions were coming up in my mind, and probably the minds of all the others. How can you tell it's female? How do you know they even have sexes? What makes you think they have blood like we do, and that that's what is coming out of her? But again, the stress and chaos relegated all such questions to a kind of intellectual quarantine.